Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Brewers Podcast joins you on a day where the Brewers find themselves in an official must-win situation. They head home to Milwaukee. Game 6 will be Friday night, but the Brewers are facing a 3-2 deficit in the NLCS against the Los Angeles Dodgers. They lost 5-2 on Wednesday. It's back-to-back losses for the first time in a month for this Brewers team. And now they know that they have to win both Game 6 and 7 Friday and Saturday to advance to their first World Series since 1982. Feels like it's slipping away a little bit, but the Brewers still going to have a couple home games and still a chance to make some pretty amazing history this weekend in Milwaukee. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Brewers Podcast. We're going to be joined shortly by Todd Rosiak, Brewers beat reporter. He has been in Los Angeles covering the past three games for the Brewers, where they were victorious on Monday night in a 4-0 win that was a little bit harrowing at the end, but nonetheless was able to hold off the Dodgers there with a dicey ninth inning, and then a couple heartbreakers. The 2-1 13 inning game on Tuesday night being the most heartbreaking battle of the series thus far, and then on Wednesday night, a 5-2 loss, probably the only game in the series that you can say thus far the Dodgers truly had in hand, not for the whole game, but for the good portion of that game. In each of the other contests, you could easily say the Brewers could have won. The Brewers could have easily swept this series and been advanced already to the World Series, awaiting the winner of the Houston Astros and the Boston Red Sox. Wasn't meant to be. Hey, we want to remind you the Brewers Podcast is brought to you today by Century Foods. Not only are they celebrating Milwaukee's run for the pennant with the rest of us, but they also have 65 years of providing Wisconsin families with all of their tailgating needs, including the best meat in town. You got to swing by Century, get your stuff, get your tailgating equipment, get out to the park on Friday. It's going to be loud. It's going to be sold out. It's going to be crazy. And it could be a stepping stone for the big, big game that is to come. Game 7 the following night, 8 o'clock start time. Going to be a late start, late night in Milwaukee for those who want to see baseball beyond the NLCS and in the World Series. It's going to be worth staying up for. After we speak to Todd Rosiak, I had a chat with Lane Grindle. You'll know him from the Brewers broadcast team on 620 WTMJ. He does all the road games with Jeff Levering. I guess there are some road games that Bob Uecker does attend, including these playoff games, of course. But Jeff Levering and Lane Grindle typically handle the road broadcasts, and then Lane is also a big part of the team. He runs the Brewers podcast. He does a lot of other things, the team's official podcast, and does a lot of other things on the side. You heard him doing public address for Game 1 and Game 2 of the NLCS. The typical public address announcer, Rob Edwards, sustained an injury and wasn't able to come to the park. So Lane Grindle filled in. He's done that once before. He talked about that a little bit and kind of what went into that. So we chatted with him about the team, about his role, about what you know, sort of his interpretation. I spoke to him before Game 5. So at the time, the hot story after Game 4 was the Manny Machado play late in the night, Tuesday night into Wednesday morning, when Manny Machado seemed to sort of step or kind of kick the back of Jesus Aguilar's a leg, kind of in the Achilles area, while running to first base. So that was certainly a hot topic. Machado was fined $10,000 for that transgression, which is a controversial fine in addition to a controversial play. Players after the game on Wednesday morning, again, that's a Tuesday night game, saying pretty point blank, Manny Machado's a dirty player, made a dirty play, and they're not happy about it. They did get him to ground into a couple double plays on Thursday, or I should say on Wednesday, so that's a little bit of the right kind of retaliation, I guess you could say. But we'll certainly talk to Todd about that as well, and I, like I said, got Lane's opinion on that. So again, the Brewers leading, or should say trailing in the series, 3-2, heading back to Milwaukee, looking for back-to-back wins to advance. I did a story that's going to be appearing at jsonline.com, some of the recent history of teams that have gone down 3-2, especially at home, and what they've been able to accomplish. I will say it's not bad for those teams. Since the wild card era dawned in the mid-90s, There've been eight teams that have been in that situation and won back-to-back games at home. There've been eight teams that lost right away in Game 6 and three more who extended the series to 7 games before losing. So that's about 42% of teams in that situation wind up winning the series. I'd say that's pretty good odds to win back-to-back games. To put those odds at 42% is not terrible. Certainly something the Brewers should be happy with if you could apply history to what's going on in this series, which of course you cannot. And maybe the best indication of that is what we saw on Wednesday, where Craig Counsell, eschewing the trend of the starting pitcher almost entirely, pulled Wade Miley after one batter. The intent was to get the Dodgers to show a bunch of right-handed hitters in their lineup, which they didn't really end up doing, but Wade Miley was in the game. David Freese, for example, was in the lineup and probably would not have been if it had been a righty starting. He then brought Brandon Woodruff in, who pitched, I think, really admirably. He threw beyond five innings, which is probably more than you could have even imagined. Did give up a couple runs, though, in the sixth and got into some trouble. The Dodgers were able to take the lead at that point. They added on. They led 5-1 at one point. Curtis Granderson with an RBI double after there were two outs in the ninth. Maybe that's a little bit of momentum heading back to Miller Park. Let's talk a little bit more about it with our guy, Todd Rosiak. Here he is. Joined now by Todd Rosiak, beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He was out in L.A., is still in L.A., covering the Milwaukee Brewers on his way home for Game 6, which gets underway Friday night. Todd, curious about the mood after the Game 5 loss. This was really the first game that it didn't feel like it could go either way. It felt like that the Dodgers kind of had that one in hand. How's the outlook that you sensed from the manager and the team, knowing that they got to win two in a row here to keep their season going?
No panic, very confident. Several guys mentioned that, they've faced similar situations down the stretch in getting into the playoffs, and they rattled off all those wins in a row at the end of the regular season. So it's not anything that they haven't faced before. Obviously, the stakes are higher here. You got to win two games to get to the World Series now. Craig Counsell had kind of an interesting take on it after the game last night, saying that, he likes the position they're in. They go back home. They've got Wade Miley. They've got Felice Chacin. They've got rested Josh Hader, Corey Knebel, Jeremy Jeffress. So their pitching should be lined up. Now it's just going to be a matter of getting the offense to show up.
Yeah, for sure. And you mentioned Wade Miley. He's going to make a little history starting back-to-back games in the NLCS. A lot of emphasis on the strategy employed there to get Miley into the game, start him for one batter, get the Dodgers to use a lefty lineup, and then change him out, bring in Brandon Woodruff. I think there was some thought that process failed because the Brewers didn't win the game, but that's not how I looked at it at all. I thought Brandon Woodruff was excellent. Obviously, did give up a couple runs late, but how did you see it, and how did the team feel about that experiment? And I don't know what you'd call that, a little sleight of hand. It seems to me that that's a success, even if they didn't win the game, but how do they look at it?
A reporter out here in the press conference after the game referred to it as subterfuge to Craig Counsell, and
yes,
of course he acted like he didn't know what that meant. but I think that's a good word. I think it was a very, very good kind of a mind game, if you will, and taking advantage of what's given. There's no rule that says you can't do what they did, and to be able to basically give Brandon Woodruff a positive matchup in the lineup for about three innings until Dave Roberts start making some switches is good. That loss falls squarely on the shoulders of the offense. It was pretty much rough going for the offense all three games in Los Angeles, and none more than yesterday. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens, if MLB institutes some kind of rule, preventing this stuff from happening. Typically it's just kind of been protocol that teams, offer up their starters in advance to let other teams prepare, and then you kind of stick with those guys. But as Craig Counsell has shown, he's not afraid to think outside the box, and he definitely did yesterday.
It seems like Dave Roberts kind of smelled that something was up because he did have his lefties in the lineup. He was leading off with a lefty. Did he talk about that at all, that maybe he kind of knew what was coming?
No, he didn't say that. He was asked if he thought that the Brewers basically did anything wrong or, broke any rules of protocol, and he said it's on the Dodgers to be ready for anything. So really didn't make much of an issue out of it at all. Maybe there was some, like you said, some buzz internally that it might happen, but the Brewers did a really good job that I could tell of covering their tracks and keeping it secret, because everybody was very surprised when he came walking out of the dugout one batter in.
You mentioned how the offense is struggling. At first, I think in this series, in this playoffs, there was some looking at Lorenzo Cain struggling, and he's 6 of 24 in this series, which isn't phenomenal, but then Aguilar is 4 of 18, Mike Moustakas is 2 of 21, Yelich 3 of 20. I don't know what the threshold is before you start using the pressing word. It's probably still too small a sample of that, but do you think it's anything... I mean, is it possible the Dodgers pitching is just that good, or is it a situation where you do think the offense seems to be, you know, this is snowballing on the offense a little bit?
My intrepid colleague Tom Hodricourt and I were talking about something along these lines this morning, and we've kind of both agreed that the Brewers just look a little bit fried right now physically. I think it's kind of up and down the lineup, but just it looks like a team that is just pressed and pressed and pressed and pushed and pushed and pushed to get into the playoffs. You know, it seemed like adrenaline kind of carried them there through the first round, and maybe you know, it's finally taking its toll a little bit on these guys. You know, we got so used to watching Yelich carry the offense for the whole second half, and he really has been a non-factor. You mentioned Aguilar, Moustakas, both of those guys have been non-factors. Lorenzo Cain had a couple hits yesterday, but otherwise, it's been really the bottom half of the lineup that's been doing most of the damage for the Brewers here in the NLCS, which is kind of crazy. So, again, they're going to have to really step it up and get some big performances from their big time players here Friday, or it's going to be the end of the season for them.
On Tuesday night, or I guess we're talking about Wednesday morning in Game 4, the big story was Manny Machado, and I don't know if Major League Baseball will have more to say about that. They did fine him. It seemed like a fairly insignificant, I mean, to us, would be very significant, but $10,000 fine. You had Christian Yelich saying that he was a dirty player, Travis Shaw saying he's a dirty player. I mean, there's definitely some strong feelings in the Milwaukee clubhouse about this. Do you think MLB is going to do more? Is that it? And is that enough? Do you think that maybe MLB is just, I mean, I don't want to make a loaded question out of this, but are they taking it too lightly by just fining him and not pursuing a suspension or anything like that?
I think it's pretty much a closed matter. You know, $10,000 fine, that's about a, you know, $5 fine to you or me. So Machado is making $16 million this year. So a slap on the wrist, I can't think that that's going to really teach him a lesson. But, you know, if MLB was going to address it in a suspension fashion or something like that, I think they would have, you know, they probably would have taken a little bit more time or made a little bit more drastic move before yesterday's game. But, you know, I think it's pretty much a closed matter at this point. I'm sure the fans will voice their displeasure to Mr. Machado tomorrow at Miller Park. And it seemed like it was pretty much water under the bridge. Obviously, winning games is most important to this right now for the Brewers.
On the bright side, Orlando Arcia has been pretty good. If there's one player in the offense who's had a better than expected postseason run, what has he said about it? Is it just simply he's feeling really good right now, or is it just the serendipity that he hit 3 home runs in the regular season and now 3 in the postseason? Like, what do you think it is that's helped Orlando Arcia's cause?
Honestly, it's been the same answers from him the entire way through, just, you know, trying to putting into practice what he had been working on in pregame and, working on when he was sent down to Colorado Springs. And obviously the timing has been really good for that stuff to kind of come to the forefront. Seeing him hit 3 home runs in the postseason and Christian Yelich hit 1 is pretty eye-opening, pretty incredible. But, tip your cap to him. He's done a really good job of taking advantage of his playing time and in his eyes, maybe reestablishing himself a little bit as the Brewers, mainstay at shortstop moving into next season. So I've got to think that this will definitely give him some confidence, regardless of how the rest of this postseason turns out. I think this will give him some confidence moving forward next year.
All right, so last thought. Gio Gonzalez left Game 4 with a sprained ankle. He was replaced on the postseason roster by Zach Davies. Gio Gonzalez now done for the rest of the postseason. In the short term, that's not going to impact the Brewers because they probably weren't going to use Gio again. And if they have Davies, it actually helped them, I guess, to have another arm in game five. But what do you think long term? I mean, how damaging is it to lose one of the few guys that could theoretically give you, you know, four or five innings if the Brewers do go out onto the World Series? Or is this a pretty simple, you know, they'll just have Davies do what Gio Gonzalez would have done?
Yeah, I don't, I mean, Gonzalez is a good guy and he adds something to the clubhouse and everything, but you know, he pitched a total of three innings in the postseason for the Brewers, or in this series for the Brewers. And I just don't see it being a huge loss for them, to be honest. You know, the lefty thing might have helped them a little bit, but, you know, with the way they've been bullpenning and the addition of Davies and everything, I really don't see it as a huge factor for the Brewers moving forward.
Todd Rosiak, he is the Journal Sentinel beat reporter covering the Milwaukee Brewers. You can find all his content at jsonline.com. They'll be back on Friday for Game 6 and possibly Saturday for Game 7. Thanks for joining us, Todd.
All right, Jared.
Thanks to Todd for joining us. Now I'm going to transition to my interview with Lane Grindle. Again, he's part of the Brewers broadcast team. He was in LA with the team. He does a lot of extra projects on the side, including the team's official podcast. Big part, if you've listened to any Brewers games on the radio this year, he's been a big part of your summer. I mean, he's definitely there for the road contest alongside Jeff Levering when Bob Uecker elects not to travel. We talked about Bob Uecker a little bit. He's obviously, even at 83 years old, still going strong and a big part of this Brewers organization, if not still the face of the Brewers organization. I think it's actually pretty safe to say he is the face of the organization. He threw out the first pitch in game one of the NLCS, so he's a big deal to every Brewers fan and certainly will be forever. And so we talked a little bit about Uke with Lane Grindle as well about this baseball team. Again, this interview recorded before Game 5, after Game 4, so we didn't make any references to pulling pitchers after the first bat or anything like that, but we did catch up about the team a little bit. Here is Lane Grindle. And now I am joined by Lane Grindle. You'll know him as a member of the Milwaukee Brewers broadcast team. You can hear him on WTMJ Radio. You might even recognize his voice from around Miller Park if you were at Game 1 or Game 2 of the NLCS. We'll talk about that in a minute. He's the fill-in public address announcer and has got some pretty good games to work with. But let's start with, first of all, you're out in Los Angeles. You're with the broadcast team. What, just off the top, what are some of the responsibilities you have right now? What are the things that you're doing when you're traveling with the team here?
Well, I do a couple of other things beyond just the radio broadcast side of things for the Brewers. I do a weekly podcast. So one of the things I'm doing on the road with the team right now is doing some interviews and getting some different things kind of put together for the podcast to come out probably later tonight after game five or tomorrow morning before the team flies back. And so working a little bit on that. And then primarily during the postseason, because Uke is, of course, working these games, my main responsibility has been to help out in games that were clinching games. So if the Brewers clinch like they did in Colorado, like they did on game 163 at Wrigley, then I'm down in the clubhouse doing a lot of the interviews with the guys during the champagne celebration. So it has been maybe a little bit less busy for me in that regard than it was during the regular season. But man, this has been fun. It's been a fun ride to be able to have a front row seat for and to watch, and just really cool to see these guys accomplish all the things they have so far this year.
So you almost would have had a clinching game. As we record this, it's series is tied 2-2 Wednesday night, another game. That would have almost been a clinching game if not for the craziness of the Dodgers winning in 13 innings on Tuesday. And we will talk about that game as well a little bit. But since you do this podcast, you're around this team, you kind of have a unique perspective on their personalities. And we kind of know on the outside of this team as a fun-loving, easygoing bunch. Are you still perceiving that as they get into the playoffs here, to the really nitty gritty? I mean, it sure seems like they're still the same guys, but do you think things have tightened up a little bit now that they're in the midst of the NLCS?
I don't know that tightened up would be the word that I would use, but I think there is an edge to them right now. It is still that same group for sure, but there's a focus. There's an intensity that you're seeing right now. If you look into these guys' eyes, they know what's right in front of them. But you get into the clubhouse, the same music's blaring. The guys are still having their fun and joking around with each other. It's not an entirely different type of situation. It's not a different feel in a large way. But you do see a little bit of intensity in some of these guys' eyes. They get it. This is a big deal. They're two games away from punching their ticket into the Fall Classic. You don't get a lot of these opportunities. I mean, Lorenzo Cain and Mike Moustakas were able to play in back-to-back World Series in 14 and 15. Curtis Granderson played in the 15 World Series, of course, and prior to that as well. But I think those guys understand it's really hard to get there, and it's really hard to get yourself to this point. And you don't want to waste these opportunities when they come about. And I think that's, you know, where a lot of the veterans' mindsets are at. And I think a lot of the younger guys understand that, but I think they're also enjoying this. I mean, this is an invaluable experience for guys like Brandon Woodruff and Corbin Burnes and Josh Hader, who is still really young. We just sometimes don't realize that because of how dominant he's been. And so these guys are getting some valuable experiences, but there's no guarantee you're going to be here again at any point in your career. You just never know. And so I think there's a little bit of both. You know, you're enjoying this ride, but at the same time, you understand the stakes are a lot higher right now.
You were public address announcer for Game 1 and Game 2 of the NLCS at Miller Park, and for the Division Series as well, I believe. Short notice, because Rob Edwards, the traditional guy, I believe hurt himself, unfortunately. So I'm guessing that was a short notice situation for you. How difficult was that? Did you have to prepare, you know, kind of at the drop of a hat? And was that a comfortable switch for you? Kind of a different perspective, a different sort of radio type gig, I guess.
Yeah, there wasn't a ton of preparation. It was somewhat short notice. Rob did Game 1 of the NLDS, and he did it with a little bit of an injury. So, I mean, kudos to Rob. He battled through it and showed his toughness, but then woke up the next day and realized, hey, this is going to be challenging. And so it's not anything long-term with Rob. He's going to be back hopefully sooner rather than later on the mic at Miller Park. But so I got a call the morning of Game 2 of the NLDS just saying, hey, can you pinch hit for us today? I did the same thing when Rob was a little bit under the weather in September of 2017 for a Chicago Cubs series. And so I said, yeah, no, I can help out. I'm happy to do it. And really, for me, it's pretty easy to make that transition because I score games, obviously, when I'm doing the games on the radio. So I know what's going on. I know how to pronounce everybody's names on both teams because I've been covering Major League Baseball all summer long. So it's not a huge transition for me. It's pretty easy. Now I say that I don't have a ton of PA experience. So that part is different in terms of, you know, what is your style? How do you want to make this work? And it's different probably to some degree doing PA for a home series in September compared to the postseason. You're doing introductions for Game 1. You've got, you know, all those moments when TV takes the ballpark live and you want to get everybody to get their towels waving. So you're a little bit more of an entertainer at times, trying to get the crowd involved. So some of those things are different. I mean, I don't know that I have a style. PA is not something that's going to be a long-term thing for me or a permanent thing for me. It's one of those things where if I can help out, I'm happy to do it. And so I'm not sure that I have any kind of style that's going to come out of it or anything like that. It's one of those things where if I can help the club when they need me to, then I'm happy to step up and do it. But I'll be really happy when Rob's able to get back in there and get back into his rightful spot.
Yeah, definitely. I don't think people realize how many moving parts there are. PA is not as simple as reading off of a lineup sheet, like who's next to bat. There's always someone talking in your ear, and it can be kind of a challenge. So it's definitely a seamless transition for you, though, it seemed. Let's go to the game itself. The most recent game, as we're discussing, this is Tuesday night, Wednesday morning, and the play everyone is talking about is this Manny Machado play at first base where he seemingly kicked the leg of Jesus Aguilar, whose foot was on first base at the time. What was your take of that when you saw it live? And I don't know if you were in the clubhouse or anything for the aftermath, but I mean, it seems pretty clear that it was a dirty play, but I don't know. There is some conversation about it. What was your take on that whole episode?
So I think that to me, there's two things here. One, you look at the play itself and it didn't look right. And like anybody watching it said, he could have avoided that and he chose not to. And he chose to step on Jesus Aguilar's foot. I mean, it's the back of his foot is essentially what he chose to do. And that doesn't sit well. I think there's a difference, JR, between playing hard and playing wrong. And what I mean by that is when guys go hard into second, and sometimes we'll go to review it and we'll deem that they slid, you know, past the bag, or they went out of the baseline to take out the second baseman. And I know that gets people worked up, but baseball has been played that way for a long time. And I think that is kind of sometimes guys' instincts to do that. And I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I'm saying in those situations, the umps go to the tape and they get it right. And I don't have a huge issue with that player moving forward. I do have a problem with reaching out and trying to grab a guy's leg, like he did twice to Orlando Arcia on Monday, and doing what he did to Jesus Aguilar, because to me that's more intentional in terms of I'm going to play outside of the norms of baseball. That's not playing hard. That's playing dirty. I mean, or whatever you want to call it. Manny Machado is an incredible player, and he swung the bat very well in the postseason so far this year. And it's too bad, I think, for he and his legacy that this is what we're going to remember, I think, in many ways from this series, at least so far through this series. He's too good of a player for us to be talking about this, but he's done that to himself. And I think his carefree attitude about it is the other problem for me. That's where I take issue with it. I go back to game one of the NLCS when he hit Manny Pena on his backswing on a swing at the plate, and Manny Pena is clearly in some pain, and he doesn't even check to see if Manny Pena is okay. That's not how baseball's played, in my opinion. There's more respect usually given to each other in this game than that. So there's just some little things that probably, I think, have not just rubbed me wrong, but a lot of people, a lot of the national media were being pretty hard on Manny Machado as well. You know, he had the comments that he came out with before the game yesterday where he said, essentially, you know, I'm going to be Manny Machado, and that doesn't mean I'm going to hustle all the time. I mean, I'm paraphrasing, but that's essentially what he said. Well, it's the postseason. I mean, you do hustle all the time in the postseason. It's not even – if it was May 18th and you said that, I still wouldn't love that comment, but I would go, okay, well, whatever, but this is the NLCS and you're not running out ground balls. I mean, to me, that's just not showing the respect to the game that it deserves. And I think that is the same thing about some of the plays that have been in question here. And clearly it got the attention of the Brewers. Jesus Aguilar said that they talked on base later and they squashed it and everything was good. But I think this is something the Brewers, they're going to have this in the back of their mind.
Yeah. And then the question becomes, I know a lot of fans want there to be retaliation. It's just not, I don't think we'll ever see that from a Craig Counsell managed team. At least it wouldn't be his call, that, especially on this stage where every base runner is so meaningful, but it's kind of hard to know how to respond to it. I mean, you brought up the Pena example. I'd forgotten about that because there have been three or four things since then. And man, it's just, there's really nothing you want to see the Brewers do that wouldn't have consequences. And so I don't know how they manage it. I don't know how they deal with it. And it's going to be interesting going forward.
Yeah, I just think that the problem with the Machado stuff is it's a trend now. You know, I mean, it wasn't one thing. And I think that's probably where some of the frustration boils over, JR. And you're right. I don't think on this stage there's a lot you can do retaliation-wise because the umpires are going to be pretty locked into this. And if, I mean, maybe you pitch him inside, but I don't think you can hit him. Because I think the umpires will be ready to skip warnings and start throwing people out of the game if something like that happens. So I don't see anything like that happening. I think the stakes are high. The Brewers are going to be about playing baseball on Wednesday and moving forward in the series.
Yeah, they can't afford to have a pitcher thrown out because of the pitching framework. You know, every pitcher is needed for X number of innings. And that's the other overriding storyline of this series is the way that the pitchers have worked together and have all to a man done their part. Junior Guerra ultimately gets the loss on Tuesday night. But, I mean, no fan is upset with the performance he turned in to that. I mean, he was outstanding. You know, we've seen great outings from Brandon Woodruff, from Freddy Peralta now. Guys that, honestly, I don't think a Brewers fan would have relied upon going into the offseason. When Craig Counsell said game one of the NLDS that they were going to do a bullpen game, honestly, my jaw hit the floor because I couldn't imagine how starting a series like that would set you up for success down the road. And here we are, four games into the NLCS, and it has worked perfectly. Has anything about has this whole process surprised you too, or did you really sense through the home stretch that this is maybe how they would approach the postseason?
Well, no, the bullpen day on game one of the NLDS surprised me. I was surprised by that too. I think it's hard because we have these conventional things that we think about in baseball, the way we grew up, and the game has changed so much. And Craig Counsell has been ahead of the curve in that regard in terms of bullpen usage and how he sets his bullpen up. He's been absolutely masterful. That's why he's the co-manager of the year from Sporting News and probably going to get more honors like that over the course of the next month or so. I think, to me, the story of the pitching has been, Josh Hader's been great. And honestly, and when we can talk about Miley and Chassin, they've been outstanding, but those two guys had good years. I mean, it's not that surprising to me, maybe the level of dominance they've shown so far, but it's not that surprising to me that those guys have been effective starting pitchers in the postseason. What has been surprising to me has been Brandon Woodruff and the arms like that Junior Guerra. I know he took the loss. Outstanding. I think Corbin Burns had the tough game too in the NLCS, but he's been incredible. It's been really fun to see, and I think that's the kind of stuff that's going to be really beneficial for the Brewers beyond 2018 too, that these guys are getting this kind of experience and they're getting comfortable in these types of big high leverage situations.
There was some question about the atmosphere at Dodger Stadium in Game 3, that maybe it was a little lethargic, and I know one of the Dodgers beat writers sort of playfully pointed out that Miller Park wasn't as loud as he thought it was going to be in Game 1 and Game 2. I'm curious in your take on that. I personally think the rally towels do take a little bit of the sound away, even though it probably feels high energy in the seating bowl. I don't know if that was just my perception. It does seem like, watching on TV, Game 3 in L.A. was a little lethargic, and then Game 4 they bounced back a little bit. I'm curious your take on the sort of the enthusiasm in these two different stadiums. And then kind of the next part is, what do you expect for Game 6, which we know is going to happen at Miller Park? I've got to think it's going to be quite the frenzy.
Yeah, I think everybody gets so worked up about it. I mean, I think part of the reason why everybody's talking about the atmosphere in these stadiums is because a couple of print writers in L.A. seem to be obsessed with it. They seem to be talking about it all the time. And then T.K. Hernandez had his comments after Game 3 in Los Angeles. I guess, it was a little bit quiet in L.A. on Monday. And, I mean, I think so much of this depends on what's happening on the field. And I know it's postseason and everything else, but when your team's behind, you're probably not going to make as much noise unless you have a threat going or unless it's a high-leverage situation. You're trying to encourage your pitcher because there's two strikes and you're trying to help him finish off the batter. I mean, so much of it is dictated by what's going on the field. And so I think that there's been more made about all that than really there needs to be. I thought the Dodger crowd was good Tuesday. They were loud. They made noise. It seems like they heard what Kike Hernandez said, but it was also a 1-1 game. And so every time somebody had a base runner on, everybody was on the edge of their seat and chewing their fingernails off. And I sometimes think that all the hand-wringing over is the crowd being loud enough is kind of silly, because it's 40,000 people, 50,000 people, and they're not all like in on some conspiracy to be quiet. They're going to react to what they're seeing on the field, and they're all sports fans. And I think to a large degree, people overreact to that. And I thought it got a lot of attention through the first three games from a handful of writers in Los Angeles that seemed to be more concerned with that than what was going on the field at times.
So as we get closer to the end here, I'll ask you a question that a lot of people, I'm sure, want to know, both professionally and personally, working alongside Bob Uecker. You know, I think we're all kind of curious how much longer Bob Uecker is going to be doing this, but for many of us, pretty much for all Brewers fans at this point, he's a voice of their childhood, and it's pretty cool that he gets to do these games, these playoff games, these high-level playoff games that he hasn't had many opportunities to do in his career. What has it been like working alongside him, and how pumped up is he for this opportunity to be in the NLCS?
Well, he's really excited. I mean, this is what you do this for. This is why we love doing what we do, is to get a chance to call these types of games. And so it's been fun to get to see him call these games and sit in the booth with him and watch him call these games. I mean, it's really been a cool thing for me as a guy that grew up thinking Bob Uecker was that, you know, on the Mount Rushmore broadcasters, it's still weird to me sometimes that I get a chance to work with him. I mean, it really is a dream come true. I tell people that all the time. And people always ask me, what's it like to work with Bob Uecker? And I always say, I can't really tell you. I mean, I don't know how to explain it. He's the funniest guy you've ever met. He's unique. I mean, it's either everything you think it is, or it's way more than what you think it is. I mean, it's really hard to put into words what it's like to work with you. He's the best, man. He is, as I said, he's funny. He's incredibly talented at putting you in the ballpark and making you feel like you're a part of the game if you're listening at home. And I mean, those are the best talents that he has and the traits that he gets the most recognition for. But I think the things that stand out to me, one has to do with our job and how he does it, and another just has to do with him as a person. The first one is, it's always about baseball first with Bob. I mean, he loves to have fun. He loves to crack some jokes here and there. But the most important thing to him is baseball. And he loves the sport. He respects the sport. And he doesn't ever want anything to take priority over the game of baseball. And I think that's really neat. You know, he does not believe – he's a big deal. I mean, he wouldn't like me saying that, but we all know that he is. But – nothing comes above baseball. Nobody's bigger than the game of baseball. And that's a real concrete core value that he has about doing the job the way he does. And the second part is, this is as a friend, he's an incredibly loyal person. He would do anything for you. And he's been so good to me and my family. And I'm just always going to be forever appreciative of that. And he's become somebody that he's one of my good friends now. And I can go to him with things, and I can go to him with questions. And it's really just, it's beyond anything I expected when I took the job in terms of the relationship I've been able to form with Bob and getting a chance to observe him do this work up close. It really is a dream come true.
He is Lane Grindle. You can hear him on the radio, especially for road games this past season and certainly going forward. You can hear him maybe over the PA if he's still on the mic for the remainder of the playoffs, which sounds like it may be. Thanks so much for joining us, Lane. Really appreciate it.
JR, appreciate it as well. Thanks for having me, and go Crew.
That's all she wrote. It gets exciting from here on out, guys. It's game 6 on Friday night. Get out there if you can. If you have tickets, it's going to be a wild ride. It's going to be a tense one. I don't know what the energy is going to be like. I've been to games before where the team has been down or facing elimination when it's not a winner-take-all game. And the energy is not always great, I found. It's more like a sort of a tepid enthusiasm, just sort of a nervousness. I kind of felt that way in game 6 of the 2011 NLCS when the Brewers came back home to face the Cardinals and ended up losing, and also a game I attended between Detroit and Baltimore a few years ago in game 3 of their ALDS series, which Detroit ended up losing, got swept in that series. But there's just sort of a, I don't know, it's more of a nervousness. But if the Brewers could just win and get to game 7, it's going to be up for grabs on Saturday night in Milwaukee. The place is going to be just absolutely hopping. At that point, it's just anybody's guess. You have no way to know who's going to win at that point. And again, like I said, there are a handful of teams over the course of recent history in the wild card era who have come home facing a 3-2 deficit in a best of 7 series and emerged victorious. So we will see if that's what befalls the Milwaukee Brewers. One more time, this podcast brought to you by Century Foods. They're not only celebrating Milwaukee's run for the pennant with the rest of us, but they have 65 years of providing Wisconsin families with all of their tailgating needs, including the best meat in town. Century Foods, your place to go for tailgating prior to Friday and Saturday's games. Hope you enjoy them. Hope the next time we're talking, we're not talking about the offseason, what the rotation is going to look like next year, what additions might get made in the offseason, whether or not they're going to non-tender certain guys, if Mike Moustakas is mutual option. Like, I want to talk about all this stuff, and we're going to. Hopefully it's not on the next podcast. Hopefully we're previewing a World Series. But, you know, either way, thanks for sticking with us. Hope you find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher. Give us a rating and review. Find me on Twitter at JR Radcliffe. That's JRRADCLIFFE. That is my name, JR Radcliffe. Again, your host for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Brewers podcast. For Todd Rosiak and for Lane Grindle, thanks for joining us. We'll chat with you soon.